Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning, God's blessings to all of you out there. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. And we have a beehive to open today. Lamar Daniel, I think I've got you on the line already, don't I?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, let me go through my things I've got to do, Mr. Daniel. I've already got people on. They've got word that you're going to be on the show here. But anyhow, this is the UR Tennis Network, American Tennis. You can get the show each week by going to your iTunes on your phone and punch in UR Tennis Network and go to any of the great shows that are done all week long with tennis in the United States. This is American Tennis, though, and our mission here is to talk about American tennis and find out what the difference makers will be for us in the coming years. We need everybody to stand up and speak out. Call today if you'd like to talk to Mr. Daniel or just to make some comments. Area code 714-583-6853. That's area code 714-583-6853. Also, you can get past shows and read my blogs at chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E.net. My T3 mentorship programs are going quite well. Thank you, Alex Slezak, up in Pittsburgh, for your help with the T3 mentorship programs. We're getting ready for my 37th summer of doing tennis camps for children and total tennis training tennis camps. We will have them in South Carolina and the Atlanta area. So thanks, folks, if you're interested. I always say that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. That's a quote from Edmund Burke. And we're encouraging you to stand up, speak out. But here's the deal. Stay professional. Address issues, not people, and nobody can find fault. And I wanted to remind all of you that Dr. Benjamin Carson, go to his, I think they've got like 3 million hits already in like 3-4 weeks now. But he was the guy that was the neurosurgeon at Johns Hopkins, and he addressed National Prayer Breakfast. Dr. Benjamin Carson, it is by far the best speech I have heard in many, many years about speaking out. He said that somebody's got to stick up to the bullies, and the bullies out there are the PC police. He said we don't need political correctness to the extent that people do not speak out anymore. You know, my mama, I always have to tell you what my mom used to say, but she always said a squeaky wheel gets the grease, but if it squeaks too loud, it gets removed. And we want you to talk about issues and ideas and not about people. And doggone it, we've got to get to the place once again where we talk about opinions out there. And I've got an opinion, Lamar, already that came through on the Internet, and it's from James. And actually, in North Georgia, James said, about Title IX, I wanted to say the quality of opportunity is really freedom. But when you have government enforcing not just the equality of opportunity, but the equality of outcome, it is no longer about freedom. It has now become socialism, and that's where we're headed in this country. So, Lamar, first of all, thank you for being on the show today. I'm going to read all your accolades here in a second after I go to a commercial. If you can just hang on a minute, and this could be a hot one. But listen, I wanted to also say, man, we're awful glad you had a great checkup today at the doctor's. That's awesome. So
thanks.
I know you're happy, and we're all happy about that. But we'll be back in a minute or two. With American Tennis, and this is Chuck Creasy.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Of all time, really, on gender equity and Title IX, and really all the things that have shaken the sports world in the past 30 years. And this is Mr. Lamar Daniel, and welcome again, Lamar.
Thank you.
I wanted to just say that just a few of the things about Lamar. that Lamar, you were working for the Office of Civil Rights in Atlanta. You worked there for over 20 years. And then during the time, you supervised 50 Title IX collegiate and 15 interscholastic patients in southeastern states. And then you also put together the package for Title IX was measured around the country, and you actually wrote the laws that we're currently under, and co-authored in 1990 what the Title IX manual that everybody goes by today. And, I wanted to say this, is that I knew that you had been around the block a few times, the times I had to sit before you in an office and sort of go over what we were doing with our men's tennis program as opposed to the women's program. But I had no idea about the broad nature. Literally every conference in the country, Southeast Conference, Atlantic Coast Conference, Big Ten Conference, Big 12 Conference, Big East Conference, Western Atlantic Conference, Southern Conference, Conference USA, Missouri, Sun Belt, Big Conference, and I could go on and on. It's not just about the colleges I don't want to say scrutiny, but you basically have reviewed all of their Title IX programs. So if I left out anything important there about your background, I wanted to just say that, Lamar, I'm calling you today because basically you to me, you were a very, very kind man. Kind and noble man, and you always treated me and the other coaches as if you understood that how much skin we had in the game, and we never felt like we were going through an interrogation. We always knew what the score was. So I thank you for that, and I felt comfortable having you on the phone because of that today.
Well, so, you're welcome.
Well, that's great. Lamar, I wanted to ask you, first of all, you worked for the Office of Civil Rights for many years, and you were the expert in Title IX affairs. Can you talk about this a little bit and the evolution, but mainly the evolution of college athletics that led you to this place where you changed from the Office of Civil Rights to being the expert in Title IX affairs?
Well, as you know, the law was passed in 1972, and it was very broad and generally stated. It just said, prohibited discrimination in programs receiving federal financial assistance. There was no regulations of specifically what it was going to cover. That didn't come about until 1975. I made my entrance to the Office of Civil Rights in 1974, and 1975 the regulations were written. There was a lot of people who contributed to those. I was not one of them. The regulation came out and allowed colleges 3 years to comply. That's till 1978. And in 1978, I had the privilege of doing the first investigation that ever occurred. I was at the University of Georgia. And, of course, they were, like everybody else in the country at that time, nowhere near compliance. But as I was writing my report sometime in early 79, my supervisor comes and said, stop what you're doing. You're going to have to go back to Georgia. They've come up with a policy interpretation that's going to be more very specific about what we're going to be looking at, which will give you an idea of the communication between the Washington office and some of the regional offices. So as they go back to Georgia, and then we did a lot of training, and I was involved in writing a manual, which was never approved at that time. And then in 1980, actual enforcement began of Title IX, and that concluded in 1984 when the Supreme Court ruled in the Grove City case that an athletic program must directly receive federal financial assistance. And since very few did, the Title IX jurisdiction was lost. It was recovered in 1987 or 88, I forget now, the years have gone by. When the Civil Rights Restoration Act was passed, and when that was passed, that's when women's sports boomed and sports that had previously you'd not heard that much about, like rowing, which men call crew, women call it rowing. The equestrian, all these sports, lacrosse on the increase, a lot of the men's sports. And then at the same time, some of the men's sports begin to be eliminated. And that has been pretty much the process has continued on. Of course, the courts have got involved in this also, and they've made some decisions involving these issues, and especially with respect to elimination of men's sports. I think nine or ten of the circuits courts have ruled that men's sports can be eliminated in order to comply with Title IX, and that's legitimate.
Great. I didn't know that. Was that just done, or was that done back then?
Oh, that's been done over time. Over time, there's no conflict there with that. As every one of them have consistently, that have the issue has come before them that has ruled, and the Supreme Court has not felt the need to take the case, any cases at that level. So that's been fairly consistent. So the elimination of the sports, that's an internal thing within the athletic department, decisions made by athletic directors.
Okay.
As to which sports will be eliminated.
Okay. You know, I've often said that, you know, Title IX, Lamar, was a very good law. Everybody, we all have sisters. I have two daughters now that I want to be able to play collegiate sports and everything. But I said it was very poorly implemented because it was never meant to hurt men's sports the way it has, but it has. I know several. I had a good friend coaching at a great program. It's now in the Big 12. But he was coaching tennis, and the AD calls him in one day, and they brought he in and the men's rifle team coach and the track coach, which was track, indoor, outdoor, and cross country. And he says, look, sports have been dropped. We can't fund everything. That's it, basically. And, you know, they tried to work it out for the athletes and everything, but it was just awful. It really wasn't meant to hurt men's sports, so. I mean, Lamar, was it?
No, it was never intended to do that. What got really, I think, things got out of hand is that in the very late 80s and 90s and in the early to mid-90s, a major emphasis was placed by women's advocacy groups on adding women's sports. As a matter of fact, people felt at the time that you had to reach there's a three-prong test for compliance with Title IX, and the first of these is proportionality. That's where the ratio of students, student athletes, equals their ratio in the student body. And while there are two other ways you can comply, these advocacy groups really push these, and a number of athletic departments decided, well, that's what we're going to meet. We're not going to be held prisoner to interest in coming. We're going to go ahead. And some did not cut any. Some merely added the women till they got to proportionality and did what they call roster management, which is basically minimizing the number of men you're going to have on a team and maximizing the number of women. Which is also is acceptable by the Office of Civil Rights and the courts, and that's what they did. Now some others made the decision to cut back on the men in order to meet compliance with Title IX. And a number of schools, especially in Division I, that played football in the FBS at the top level. I still like to call it 1A. It just makes more sense to me. But anyway, they chose to cut back to six men's sports. You got to have 16 to play at that level. And what they did was went with six men's and 10 women's. And that way they were able to meet that proportionality, that test, that prong one. And they chose to do that. And that's a lot of the elimination of tennis came about in those schools doing
right.
that.
800-400. And we've got a caller here, area code 503. I'm going to bring you on just a second, caller, if you can hang on here a second, area code 503. But Lamar, what I was going to say, yeah, they just haven't eliminated some. They've basically decimated it. We now have over 400 men's tennis programs dropped in the last 20 years.
Wow.
Now, look, here's my question. It took 80 to 100 years to build those programs up. If you go to all the men's programs, it took 80 to 100 years at a lot of these schools. And in a period of 5 to 10 years, the women have been hyper-jetted forward, and they want everything the same in 10 years. And I've never understood that. I mean, I even see in the people that are hired for athletic department workers, and you know, this is no cut on anybody, Lamar, but where would you get somebody to work in an athletic department as a women's coach? Well, either they had had to come before Title IX from, maybe they had had some management experience in a college education and everything, and they were 30, but they never coached tennis, or you had to get somebody very, very young. But what was really aggravating is that, don't you think that women's sports or women's salaries are a bit out of whack? You know, and the marketplace, they always say market value, but some of these women's salaries, and nobody's against women make. Matter of fact, I got to tell you, my boss we had on last week, Dwight Rainey, he was forced to give me a raise or two because I had to keep up with the new women's coach when she came in. You know, I mean, it worked backwards in some people, but, it's sort of hyper-jetted out of place. I'm going to bring on this caller here a second and just think about your answer. Caller, are you on the line, area code 503?
Yes, Brian Parrott here.
Brian, I thought it was you and Lamar. Brian, can I tell you, Lamar, who you are?
Sure, absolutely.
You've got a father on the line here whose two of his sons played golf at University of Georgia, and then his third son played tennis, was an All-American at University of Georgia, and
wow,
then transferred to Portland, and also has been on the Pro Tour, and his son is a U.S. Open champion in mixed doubles. So
right.
I'm going to let Brian talk a minute here, but we'll come back to that question about the hyper-jetting of women 80 years. That's sort of like Star Trek or something. They just took their program, went from zero to the 98th percentile in 10 years. But, Brian, what have you got for Lamar this morning?
Well, I have two things I'd like to ask. One is,
I'm sorry, I can't. You're not coming in.
Brian, you're
clearly
breaking up. Are you... You're breaking up a little bit. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you better. We can hear you better.
Okay. The two questions are, one is, junior college has a two-visa limit in college tennis for the junior college. Do you think that could work in the NC2A Division I, II, III to open up some more spots for Americans? And then the second question that I'd like to see if you could address is, one of the reasons that has not been instituted is the threat of lawsuits, and I have a hard time believing any college president would allow a lawsuit to go against something that was trying to level the playing field for American players. So those are my two questions.
Well, these two separate things. Now, one has to do with the two foreigner limit you're talking about in junior college, right? And not necessarily with the gender equity, but the foreign issue, which is separate. So you understand where he's coming from there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I tell you, I agree with you 100%. Now, I doubt if anybody there listening to this show is more conservative than I am on this particular issue. But the NCAA is a politically correct organization. I don't think you could get them to do anything that they would think appear to be make them anything other than that. Yeah, I just don't see much hope in the NCAA changing anything. And tennis certainly has. And I've had this conversation with Chuck many times. I go to schools and I see all these you know, it'd be almost the men's roster would be total foreigners, almost at many schools. Some that's been very successful. That's a coach doing that now. That's his. Nobody's telling him to do that. He's going out doing it himself. And not everybody does that, but you have to do to some degree to be successful. But when I see these rosters, there's nothing but foreigners only. I think it's terrible. But I don't think the NCAA will ever do anything about that. And what
no,
was the second?
No way they would sue. I mean, who's going to sue? First of all, Brian, we talked this over before, but the parent of the child who's from a different country, they're not going to sue. Because the kid will just go somewhere else, and around the world, it's always a one or a two foreigner limit in every other place in the world. The coach isn't going to sue, or the AD would say, "What are you talking about?" The coach wouldn't have a job. The AD's not going to sue. Who's going to sue? So the ITA says somebody's going to sue. That doesn't make sense.
Especially now, it would somehow be, in my opinion, would be somehow meshed with the illegal immigration issue, and that would be the end of it, sure enough.
Right. And, Brian, go ahead. Anything else you want to talk about? I'm going to keep you on here a few minutes if you want to jump in, because you've got great insights, having three sons, and thank God they probably got scholarships and you could have never afforded, even as good talented as they were.
Yeah, definitely. And I know there's many families out there, American families, that are interested in college tennis, but realize with 400 programs dropped that it's even more difficult to get there. And with 135 nations producing players, it's very difficult for American kids to get spots on American teams. But I'm all ears. I'll stay on and listen.
Yeah, Brian, explain that, though, one more point. You always said, like, you felt the top 60 kids would have no problem in the USA, right?
Right. I think our top 50 definitely can play and be competitive and be desirable for a college program. It's the fact that there are 135 nations funding the development of their top 10 or top 20 players. And then, so that's 2,500 players a year that are coming into the system, and it's very difficult. I think a 2 or 3 visa limit would be a good solution to the situation myself.
Yeah, and Lamar, one of the things in an earlier show, the reason I know Brian's been on 3 or 4 times, what a wonderful father and a man he is. He's been teaching tennis his whole life. But we had Luke Jensen on here, the Jensen brothers. They were Grand Slam champions, French Open, and Luke now coaches up at Syracuse, and he's made a stand. And we want to give Luke a way to go at a boy, because he's made a point to only recruit American players.
Fantastic.
And you know, he said that there are, like, countries recruit him. They want to fly him to their country in Europe or Asia to recruit their players. And they wine and dine the coaches. And then what happens is you pretty much feel indebted to do that. You know, so it's really out of hand here. I want to follow up that one question, but don't you think, just real quick, an opinion, don't you think that women's salaries and all the opportunity should not have been hyper-jetted 80 years forward?
Well, I can remember the first AD that paid a women's basketball coach over $100,000, and I remember talking, and I had spoken with him. And then the second one, who also did it, the fear was that they would be sued and that they would lose on an equal work for equal pay basis. And they did not want to. They felt the lawsuit itself would be a stigma. So that's why they gave in.
Right. And you know what? This is the lawsuits and fear of them are unbelievable. I'm down in Texas right now at a pretty interesting meeting. It's fantastic. A lot of good people down here talking about tennis. But I only found out today, you know, Texas has a loser pay on lawsuits. Loser pays the court fees. Don't you think that would solve everything? Rick Perry, the governor, put that in down here. And, wow, what a deal that is. That would keep frivolous lawsuits from happening, and it might get rid of all these scaredy cats that won't go out and, and just do what is right. And that's what we're asking for here. You know, just do what is right. I got to go to commercial. We'll be right back with Lamar Daniel in American Tennis. If you want to call in, it's 714-583-6853. We'll be right back.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
And this is Chuck Creasy, and I'm back with American Tennis. We have on the line the nation's leading, or if not the leading expert, one of the best men I know to talk to about this, because he's done it inside and out for just about every college in the land. And it is a, again, do you think, Lamar, the definition I use, a very good rule, very poorly implemented, would be accurate?
I think it would be to some degree. The problem is a lot of the decision making that has had a negative impact on men's sports has been, you know, internal to various universities, because other people, you know, some schools have not cut any, and So I don't know if I would blame that on Title IX. I think it's where there are options, and where there, you know, you can go different ways. Some people may choose the easiest way, what they see is the easiest way for them.
Yeah, I mean, would you just say that it's athletic directors cowering to the loudest voice within some of the women just – And, you know, I mean, you know, and I could get myself into trouble, Lamar. You know, my father told me all these things. He said, one of them, he said, son, women were meant to be loved, not to be always understood. And please, the women out there, I am not anti-women athletics. I've coached so many women lately, and women absolutely need to have sports teams. But the point being is that for a man, when my wife maybe is upset with me, or a woman, I've learned a long time ago, I have no chance when it comes to a heated discussion with a woman, Lamar. And anybody married out there will say the truth. Now, I'm going to get myself into trouble. I probably won't be able to go back home. I am married to the best human being in the history of the world, though. And I love her so much, but the point is that we as men, we're defenseless against that stuff, and we see, as coaches, we used to see that all the time, to be very honest, that my golly, just because she's squeaking the loudest, she gets the attention, the squeaky wheels get the oil there. And I it just is not right. Let me tell you something here, and maybe you didn't know this. But right now, in the sport of tennis, Title IX has allowed about 65% of the women in U.S. college women's tennis are from foreign countries. So what this means is that basically American men can't play, American women can't play because of foreign athletes. Now, Dwight last week, Dwight Rainey eloquently said, well, that's on you coaches. You coaches were the ones that made those decisions and, you know, the pressure to win. And, yeah, it is. So, you know, maybe the problem there is we've got to go more with the ITA and we've got to maybe make some stands. But, Lamar, wasn't Title IX set up to protect women from the USA and not foreign women?
Well, that certainly was the original intent. There are other federal laws involved in this sort of thing. I think, several sports are recruiting foreigners. For instance, volleyball also does that, and golf, and there, but not to the degree that I think that has occurred in tennis. Tennis is just, I mean, head and shoulders above all the others, and it is the coaches who have done that on, you know, for the to win. And I told a coach one time, and he didn't particularly like this, but he was one of those who had all the all foreigners on his team, and I told him, I said, an athletic director told me one time that if I wanted to cut something and I needed to cut a sport, my first choice would be tennis because there's nothing but foreigners on the team.
Wow.
I said, think about that, buddy.
You know, our athletic director of Clemson, when this started coming around in the mid-'80s, I remember asking the athletic director there, the wonderful and great Bobby Robinson, who was about the kindest and most fair man I've ever met in my life.
Yeah. Great
so
person.
Lucky to get to work for him and to work for Dwight Rainey. I was very, very lucky. But I asked him one time, I said, would they ever cut tennis? He said, no, they would never cut tennis programs because, he said, you get maximum exposure out of least participants, and it makes the most sense. Also, the alumni tend to be higher-income alumni who can donate back to the universities and those type of things. But it has worked just the opposite. As you say, because the teams are all foreign, the AD comes in and said, where is my least avenue for problems here? And, okay, all tennis is all foreign. I can just drop that sport and no calls from parents and that many calls from alumni, and we can sort of do it discreetly. That's the way it looks like to me anyway, Lamar.
I think that's the way it's the way it is. And that was, to me, a very commonsensical approach if a coach allows to do that. Now, that coach that I told that to, now, he didn't like it at all. But, he had all foreigners. And so, you know, I won't say who that is, but they've been very successful.
Website, CoachJPWeber.com has a website. He calls it the Road Less Traveled or Road Not Traveled, and he – every week he has one All-American team and one All-Foreign team in there. At least he's bringing light to it. You know, and you know, to be truthful with you, Coach Parrott and myself have been working. We've talked to the ITA. We've talked to the junior college people. We have talked to the ITA is disappointing because I really think that they could do so much more. They need to just be least – have a forum where people can talk about this, and they could do so much more. I don't think they understand the level that college has been decimated. College tennis has been decimated. I always give the quote, Lamar, that in 1982 we had 39 players that played college tennis in the top 100 in the world. And today we only have one. The lone John is from the University of Georgia. Hey, Lamar, how is it not discrimination for women to get twice as many scholarships than men? I mean, I had to live through that, but they got eight. We got 4.5. Come on. And
well, they've got. I know if you were to do a sport by sport comparison, that's the case. Same way, with women's golf. They got six for women, and men only have 4.5. But there are 85 football scholarships, and nothing approaches that on the women's side. And that's the reason why this was an NCAA decision to limit those scholarships. It was not the Office of Civil Rights, so Title IX had nothing to do with it. I guess that's how they felt they could keep the scholarships there on the men's side. Men's basketball has 13, women's has 15, and I find very, very, very few women's basketball teams with more than 12 or 13 scholarships.
Wow. What are some of the other sports comparisons? I guess baseball to softball. What's the difference? Is there?
Baseball, I believe, is 11-7, and softball is 12. Baseball averages 35 participants. Softball averages about 19. Soccer, women is 14. Men's is, 9.9 or something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. Track, women is 18. Men's is, 12.5 maybe, something like that. That's all done to balance it off to the extent that possibly
football,
can.
Right. And Lamar, could you speak about that? Because a lot of our listeners probably don't understand how this makes sense. I would have been so fine, I would have never lost my mind over some of this stuff. I think I probably would have stayed in coaching longer than my 33 years, God help me. But the point is that football with their scholarships are in the equation, and there's no counterbalance to that. Dwight Rainey talked about that last week. Why wouldn't they take a more common sense approach? Football is the cash cow. Why couldn't it be put out by itself and then just say, look, everybody's got the same amount of scholarships? They hit us where it hurt badly, and then they kept on hitting is what it felt like.
Well, that was specifically considered and rejected. The reason being is that revenue production has nothing, is not a factor in compliance with Title IX.
Wow.
That was by the people who drew up the regulations. The policy interpretation to had considered that. I believe it was even considered in Congress. Senator Javits, I want to say had an amendment for that, and it failed.
Well, it's the first time I've ever heard that money doesn't talk. But,
yeah.
The money in football is a completely separate animal. I mean, football and basketball, Dwight was saying last week, and it stuck with me that it scared me quite a lot, that probably in the next 10 years, with all these super conferences, they might have maybe four conferences, 16 teams each, 64 teams, and they'll be making all the money. Football and basketball will be powerful things, but then they'll have women's sports fully funded, and then all the men's sports might go to clubs. Do you see that happening maybe?
Well, I see at least two occasions, and I doubt if you know this, but I know from having worked with major football, I worked with the College Football Association when it existed. I know on at least two occasions those major conferences looked at removing themselves from the NCAA and starting their own organization. Now, what that would have led to, I don't know, but the NCAA would have folded. Well, would have been something like the NAIA had they left.
We were always told the NCAA really is not a separate organization. It is all of the members, basically. The office in Indianapolis is just the place that sort of takes care of all the rules, and they have their employees, but the RADs always would say, we are the NCAA, but if everybody decided to do something different, that'd be an interesting one. I better move on here with this one. One of the big questions I wanted to ask you is, always bothered me is talking to you. In my last 3 years coaching, I had two number one ranked players in the state of South Carolina, Lamar, boys that were walk-ons, and I was forced to cut them from the team because of gender equity rules, because they were 11 or 12 on the team. I've been given a limit of 10 players. Now, I'm going to preface this. by saying that, in my 33 years, my first 18 years, I never cut a player. If they would do the work, I kept them on the team. And we had some wonderful success stories about those young men who just wanted a chance. And then they, of course, with all the Title IX, they would cut me to 14, then they cut me to 12, then they cut me to 10. And the bottom line on the thing was, why, as far as numbers in proportionality, do they count people instead of opportunities? Because in case of women, the women's coach could not get walk-ons. And so there I was. And I always used to say, if you remember, I said, opportunities to compete is not the same as bodies in the seat. And we needed to talk about opportunities. Equity means equal chance, not equal outcome. People get equity and equality and confused. Equity means equal opportunity, am I right? And then equality is you have an equal outcome. But why wouldn't they just say, look, to the women's programs, hey, you've got 15 chances for opportunities to compete. If you find them, fine. If you only have 6, fine. If you only have 12, fine. But, you know, you've got 15 opportunities. So, men, you've got 15 opportunities. Same thing for you.
Well, that's a good question. The opportunity is defined by Title IX and enforced by the Office of Civil Rights is that if you are on that team and eligible to compete, then that is the opportunity, and that is in every one of those are people who can be should be counted because they receive benefits from virtue of being on that team.
Well, that's Here we are, Lamar, 30 years later after it was implemented, or no, let's see, it's 40 years since 72, and we really have an increased amount of women playing tennis. We've given plenty of opportunities, but I think it's still 3-1. If somebody wants to call and give me the exact numbers if they know, but in the United States, at one time we had like, I think it was 30,000 men and like 11,000 women competing in the 18 and under age group. So if you look at it that way, and women have twice as many scholarships, you see where I'm going with this. The reasoning is women have 6-1 opportunities. And again,
Go ahead.
And if you add in there now that all the foreign women are coming over there, there's not all the women's coaches, Lamar, will say, well, we can't find players. There's no players out there. Well, you know what? You can find them. They might not be as good, but you can find them. You know, but with all the foreign players, again, it has not solved the issue of giving opportunity to American women first.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, there's really I know one major difference between men's and women's tennis from that I've observed over the years. Women mature earlier than men. And those really good women tennis players go pro in their early teens, to mid-teens, whereas men need more time to mature, mostly going through the college experience and then into the pros. And that's a major difference between the two there. Also, from my own personal observation, a number of women, after maybe have played, had lessons since they were kids, played in high school, and they just simply don't want to do it anymore, not on a highly competitive level. And,
okay,
and from my perspective, that's a difference.
Well, would you say this is true or false? Women want sports, but men need sports. It's central to who we are. The competition is sort of within us. And women want sports because mainly the opportunities they can get. I'm not saying all women. I know some extremely competitive women. I coached women exclusively almost for 2 years after Clemson. And but I've always said that women want sports, but men need sports. So consequently, the 3-1 ratio as far as participation. You know, so I don't know
that's
if you want to
answer. That's a bit
that
too much of a generalization for me, Chuck.
Yeah. That's a generalization, and you're more into facts. But here, I'll give you another one. Do you know when the last time we had a woman who played college tennis from the United States go through the college system and become a professional afterwards. In the top,
the only one I've ever known was Lisa Spain at Georgia.
Right, I think, and Lisa Raymond, okay, now, there, it's been nearly 20 years.
Yeah.
One about 20 years. So I would say that college women's tennis is definitely not a good training ground if you want to be a professional. The proof is in the pudding there.
Yeah.
As far as men goes, yeah.
Absolutely.
As far as the men goes, it's probably not either. We had 39 of the top 100, as I said, in 82. Now we have one from the United States of America. We're doing a lot of things wrong here. You know, and I want to get another question from Brian, but I have one more last question for you, Lamar, here. We've got about 8 or 9 minutes.
Okay.
Why was the sports arena the only place where we saw Title IX activation in the past 25 years? I've never heard band members or cheerleading squads or social club, anything on campus. They've always ignored it. They've used sports as the spearhead for this. Am I right?
I'm glad you asked me that, Chuck, because we live in a society, and even with sports writers, are just like the rest of the liberal press, in that they think you're more interested in the love life of an overrated linebacker or whether the grown man took drugs to ride his bicycle. They think that's your interest. There have been several instances in Title IX. Sexual harassment is a major issue. It has been and still is. Early on, there was a denial of admission to graduate schools, professional schools, denial of admission to women. That no longer exists as an issue. Women are admitted to those schools in greater ratios than they apply. And then, you know, undergraduate schools. There's also just in general treatment of women in colleges and universities. All that has or have been issues. And before, it's just that Title IX just is the – and sexual harassment. You'll see that every once in a while, too. But sports writers just don't – there's been several cases in court that were enormously interested, that, but it just doesn't get make print. They don't think you're interested in that. They think the – this overrated linebacker's love life or non-existent love life is something you'd rather hear than hear about this.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. I'd heard the opposite, but thank you for enlightening all of us with that one and telling us the truth on that. And again, the media controls so much, daggone it. We have freedom of the press to the place where they've become biased in every way, and it's become sort of the market value. You don't know what's true and what's not true. Somebody
That's right.
said recently, getting the truth is like drinking water from a fire hose. You just everything's got a slant on it, and so people really are. We're extremely informed with media operations, but we really are uninformed when it comes to what actual truth is and what is actually going on. And then you add political correctness to that. Like, you've got to listen to that Dr. Benjamin Carson. Lamar, it's unbelievable. One last question, and then I will wrap her up here. I want Travis's father, Brian, in a minute. But why can men go out and try out for women's sports if they don't have, like, say, if men don't have a volleyball team, can they go try out for women's sport?
No, they can't, because in most athletic programs, men have already been are already represented, at least, you're going to go back to that ratio comparison with the student body. And in most cases, because there are not that many schools that meet that that first test of proportionality. But in the other schools, men will be – there'll be more men there anyway, and they can't do that. Now, the only sport that women can try out for any sport other than a non-contact sport unless they have their own teams. And that used to be an issue in elementary and I mean in secondary schools, but it really isn't anymore. It's just a moot point. There's been a couple of cases where guys have tried to play on female teams and they go to end up going to court, and I think they've all lost.
Well, I'm reminded of that case up at Duke, I believe it was, where they had a female place kicker
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up getting cut, and they, I think they settled out of court for a huge sum of money. Do you remember that case?
Yes, I remember that.
And was that, I mean, did they sort of push that thing under the rug a little bit there? Or I you probably can't say that, but it was crazy. They cut her, didn't they, and then she sued or something.
Yeah, she did. I think the coach there at the time had probably over evaluated her ability. There are some women who can kick very accurately from close within 30 yards up, but you start going beyond that, they don't have the legs, so you end up having to have more than one kicker, which some teams do anyway, but most do not at the college level, but. I don't know what exact details of that case, but I think Duke mishandled the situation. Somebody Duke mishandled the situation.
I remember the situation out of Colorado, got a good guy fired out there. I remember he just made a comment or something, and they fired him for political. The PC police came down on him. But, hey, Brian, you got any quick questions before we got a few minutes here?
Well, I just wanted to make the comment that I think we really should reach out to college presidents to get their take their temperature on the idea of opening up spots for American sons and daughters of taxpayers, and see if there's some support that could be generated there to convince the NC2A to look at the same thing they're doing in junior college tennis. That's all I'd have to say.
Right. And again, we want to let everybody know we are absolutely not against women's athletics. We embrace it. We want everybody in America playing tennis, men and women, and we want equal opportunities. But we don't want women pushed out, American women pushed out by foreign women, and we do not want American men pushed out by foreign women, foreign men, American women. And then basically American men's programs are, well, 400 plus, Lamar. I mean, can you think of anything, any quick words of wisdom? You know, we got a couple minutes here. Anything we could do, I mean, with the non-revenue sports, or are we doomed to mediocrity?
Well, I think Brian's suggestion is excellent, to go to the president. I'd not only go to the president, I'd go to the board of trustees, who in most cases are over the president, or the board of regents. Or if you know, in the state of Georgia, the board of regents would be is the president's, and the chancellor is their boss. I'd go to them. I'd go to the very top. You may even want to start with the governor. I know. When Title IX was passed, I believe I'm thinking Jimmy Carter was president of Georgia, and I know some people from the University of Georgia went to him about something having to do with Title IX. Of course, he passed it on to somebody else, like any governor would do. But that's what I would do. I would pursue it from that, because I think it's an excellent idea.
Yeah, and again, we push this, is that we want you to stand up and speak out. And I am so emboldened as just an American citizen to say what is true and at least get my opinion out there. Since I listened to Dr. Benjamin Carson, what bravery, what courage, and what he did is really stand up to the PC bullies, the PC police. We respect everyone and want America to thrive. We want American tennis to thrive. And God bless every foreign player that comes into under rules that are sane. And if they contribute to our programs and to our lifestyle here, God bless them. We are a country of immigrants. But, you know, the thing is, we've got to get a handle on this and do it soon. We'd like to thank Lamar Daniel here this morning. We'll in hang on.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his tombstone. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing and he can't be.
process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Thank you, Lamar Daniel.
You're welcome.
God bless you and your family, and thank you so much for your enlightening interview, and just hope I get a chance to talk to you soon. See you
next
week.
Yeah, I hope
so,
too.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.